Now, when we come to chapter 10, for the first time, we are beginning to see the distinction that God is making between the books of Samuel and Kings and the book of Chronicles. Now, in the book of Samuel, we have a great deal about King Saul. In fact, his entire history is given there. Now, from God's viewpoint, we have now only one chapter given. I'm of the opinion that a great many men today, and women for that matter, that have occupied a large place in human history, they won't get much of a write-up in heaven. That's true of Saul here. He got one chapter here. The rest of it's all about David in 1 Chronicles. Then in 2 Chronicles, all about David's family. David is the subject, but not Saul. And yet, down here, from the human viewpoint, Saul occupied a very prominent place. It's amazing that some of the great men of this world apparently don't have very much of a place as far as God is concerned. They turn their back upon him. This is an amazing chapter for that reason. Just one chapter given to Saul. And what's it about? Probably the Lord picked out some of the outstanding feats that he performed? No, because works never commend you to God. So it's not that. Actually, it's the death of Saul, how he was slain. And we have something told us here that's the most amazing thing in the world. Now, you will recall that when we were back in 1 and 2 Samuel, we attempted to determine who slew Saul, who was the one that was responsible for his murder, or did he commit suicide? And actually, the record back in the two books of Samuel goes something like this. He was wounded, that is, mortally wounded, in battle with the Philistine. Some Philistine gave him a mortal blow. And he said to his servant, "I don't want to be killed by a Philistine. You take your sword and run it through me." And he wouldn't do it. The servant said, no, he would not do it at all. And as a result, why, Saul was able to fall on his own sword. And was he able to kill himself? Was he physically able to do it? Well, that's always been a question. Well, then there came along an Amalekite and saw the situation. He went to David and he claimed that when he arrived, Saul was still alive and he slew him. And David slew this Amalekite because he said, out of your own mouth, you've condemned yourself. Now, who's responsible for the death of King Saul? Now, actually, with a case like this, you just about need the FBI. But I don't think that we'll need to call them in because we're going to have a confession of the one who actually took the life of Saul. Who is responsible? All right, now let's read this chapter. It says, "Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard after Saul, after his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. And the battle went sore against Saul, and the archers hit him. He was wounded of the archers." Apparently, did not die. "Then said Saul to his armor-bearer, 'Draw thy sword, thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and abuse me.' But his armor-bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. So Saul took a sword and fell upon it. And when his armor-bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise on the sword, and he died. So Saul died, and his three sons, and all his house died together. And when all the men of Israel that were in the valley saw that they fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, then they forsook their cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them." Now, I assume from this record that when that Amalekite came along, Saul was already dead, and he went into the presence of David because he knew that David and Saul were enemies, to take credit for the slaying of Saul. He thought probably David would bestow upon him some honor and give him some reward. And he didn't dream that he was going to get what really came to him, which was, David said, out of your own mouth you've condemned yourself and you've slain the king. And he executed him on the confession of the man. But apparently the man was not guilty, and he was very foolish in taking credit for something that he should not have taken credit for at all, or take the blame for, because that's what it amounted to when he got in the presence of David. Now, will you notice, verse 8, it came to pass on the morrow, when the Philistines came to strip the slain, that they found Saul and his sons fallen in Mount Gilboa. And when they had stripped him, they took his head and his armor and sent into the land of the Philistines round about to carry tidings unto their idols and to the people. They put his armor in the house of their gods and fastened his head in the temple of Dagon. Now, they did this terrible dishonor to him. I was in Ascalon at the temple of Dagon. Samson, you know, had been there. And apparently this is where Saul was. And that is where they brought his head and his armor. Now when all Jabesh Gilead heard all that the Philistines had done to Saul, they arose, all the valiant men, took away the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons, brought them to Jabesh, and buried their bones under the oak in Jabesh, and fasted 7 days. Now somebody says, does that clear the case? No. Who really is responsible? Now I want to read a very important verse that you might pass over here in the Scripture. In fact, these last two verses of chapter 10. So Saul died for his transgression which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it, and inquired not of the Lord. Therefore he slew him, and turned the kingdom unto David, the son of Jesse. Now, who was it that slew Saul? Well, he inquired not of the Lord, therefore he slew him. Who's he? The Lord. The Lord is the one who took his life. The Lord hath given, and the Lord hath taken away. Now, the Lord takes the responsibility. God says, I removed Saul. I executed him. Now, maybe you want to find fault with the Lord. Maybe you want to have him arrested for murder. Well, he has taken many a one. And by the way, that's the reason God says that you and I are never to take human life. You know why? The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away. Until you and I can give life, we have no business taking that life away. Only God can give life, and God can take away. And for him, it's not murder. It's murder for you and me. And he says that life is to be surrendered. When you take the life of another human being, you have no right to do that. And that is a great sin. So that Amalekite was executed for it. And why was Saul executed? He died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not. Now, what is the great sin, therefore? The sin that God will bring capital punishment, and he'll do the executing, and he doesn't mind taking responsibility. He took Ananias and Sapphira. A great many people give Simon Peter credit for that. Simon Peter was the most surprised person there that day when they fell down dead, or at least when Ananias did. He didn't dream that would happen. But God takes responsibility for that. There is a sin unto death. And this man died because of his transgression. Many times God reaches in and takes a human life because of that. And he took the human life of this man. I've lived long enough now that I can look back, and many times I've seen God put a man aside in many ways. He can just put him on the shelf. He can put him out of his service. Or he can remove him actually from an office. God moves in the affairs of man. He hasn't abdicated today. He's still running the universe. It's his universe. And by the way, he'll run his way. If he wants to remove this one, that'll be his business, not yours or mine. And he's not accountable to us, but we are accountable to him. And he's the one that calls the shot. He is the one who's the umpire. He's the one that makes the decisions. And this man didn't inquire of the Lord. He turned to the underworld. And by the way, who are you listening to today? Who are you listening to? You hear God's voice today? Are you listening to man's voice, or actually to Satan's voice? This is the thing that causes God to move into the affairs of man. What a chapter this is. It gives us heaven's light on a very mooted subject.